So the reading's taken from Luke chapter 2, verses 40 to 52, and as mentioned, that is page 858 in the church Bibles. And the child grew and became strong, filled with wisdom, and the favour of God was upon him. Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up according to custom. And when the feast was ended, as they were returning, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. His parents did not know it, but supposing him to be in the group, they went a day's journey. But then they began to search for him among their relatives and acquaintances. And when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem searching for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. And when his parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us so? Behold, your father and I have been searching for you in great distress." And he said to them, "Why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?" And they did not understand the saying that he spoke to them. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was submissive to them. And his mother treasured up all these things in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favour with God and man.
Well, good morning, everyone, and a very warm welcome to Grace Church Greenwich, particularly if this is your first time with us. Really glad to have you. My name is Jono, for those of you who don't know me, and I work here at Grace Church Greenwich. And a happy new year to you all as well. And I hope you all had a lovely Christmas. I actually tested positive for COVID 5 days before Christmas, so me and my wife Naomi planned to go to Scotland, but ended up staying in London. But still had a lovely time nonetheless. We ate tasty food, watched good TV, played some fun games. And we also still managed to receive some gifts. So I got this fancy notebook. As you can see, it's got my name engraved on the front, which is quite fun. And I also received this lovely comfy bike seat, which I hope will bring some luxury to my cycle rides. And we also got a new laptop. It wasn't technically a Christmas gift. We actually bought it for ourselves about 2 months ago. But since then, I've become very precious about this laptop. If it's anywhere near some liquid, I'll be thinking about how someone might spill something on it. If it's anywhere near the floor, I'll be thinking about how someone could stand on it. I've even been washing my hands before using it, which is probably a bit extreme. But I wonder if you'd have an equivalent, something you're very precious about. Well, in today's passage, Mary has an equivalent, something she's very precious about, something she cherishes. Let's have a look at verse 51 in our passage, which Matt just read for us. And I'll read from halfway through. And his mother, that's Mary, treasured up all these things in her heart. And what are all these things? Well, it's what she's seen and heard in her son, what she's seen and heard in Jesus. That's what she's precious about. That's what she cherishes. That's what she treasured up. Now, Mary was a model for us earlier in Luke. You might remember that Zechariah disbelieved the angel's words. But Mary was the opposite. She believed the angel's words, and she was commended for it. So Mary was a model for us earlier in Luke, and so I think she's a model for us here too. As Mary treasures these things about Jesus, we too should treasure these things about Jesus. And I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, why wouldn't you treasure something this joyous? Think of all the gladness Jesus has brought in these chapters. What do the shepherds do as they return from Jesus? They're praising God. What does Mary do as she sings of Jesus? She's rejoicing in God. What does John do as he meets with the unborn Jesus? He's leaping even in his mother's womb. And if someone brings this much joy, of course you treasure them. You know, I'm happy about my laptop, but I haven't done any praising, rejoicing, or leaping over it. But that is what people do with Jesus in these chapters. And so if I'm precious about my laptop, how much more I should be precious about him? How much more I should cherish him? How much more I should treasure him? But here's the question. What about Jesus are we to treasure? Well, that's where the rest of this passage comes in. And I think it comes in two parts. We're to treasure who he is, and we're to treasure how he acts. And we'll take those two things in turn. So firstly, who he is, and this is point one on the inside of the service sheets. Jesus is the Son of God. Jesus is the Son of God. And Luke has actually told us that already. Or more specifically, the angel has told us that already. So here's what Gabriel says in chapter 1, verse 32. And he, Jesus, will be great and will be called, here it is, the Son of the Most High. And the Most High, that's just another name for God. So it's like calling Jesus the Son of God. And actually, that's exactly what Gabriel does three verses later. Here's what he says. The child to be born, Jesus, will be called holy, the Son of God. So Jesus is clearly Son of God. But what does that actually mean? Well, I think it means two things. It does mean Jesus is divine, that Jesus has come from God as God himself. That's probably what we think of instinctively, isn't it? And we'll come to that second. But it also means Jesus is royal. He's the royal son. And I've put that as the first subpoint on the service sheets. And to understand this, we need to go back to the Old Testament. And you might know that God made a promise to David that his child would have an endless royal line. His offspring would have this everlasting, eternal dynasty. And then God describes his relationship with this offspring. Here's what God says. I will be to him a father, and he shall be to me a son. So to be an offspring of David, to be a son of David, is actually to be a son of God. It's a title, a name for a king in his family. And Luke's clearly told us that Jesus is due that title. So he is a son of David. Jesus is in Joseph's family, and Joseph was of the house and lineage of David, as Luke says. And he even is a kingly son of David. Jesus will have the throne of his father David. So Luke's clearly told us that Jesus is this royal son. But in today's passage, Luke actually shows us that firsthand. Jesus really fits the bill of this royal son. Let me show you that from the story. So it's what the Jews call Passover time. It's a big moment in their yearly calendar. And the boy Jesus and his parents, they go up to Jerusalem. Nothing unusual seems to happen during the visit, but after the visit, the action really seems to get going. So Jesus' parents leave Jerusalem, they start the journey home, and they assume Jesus is with them. It turns out he isn't. He's actually stayed behind in Jerusalem. And a day later, they realise this, and they realise he's missing. So they return to Jerusalem, and eventually they find him in the temple. And he's in conversation with these teachers. And this is the bit I want us to notice. Let me read verse 47 for us. And all who heard him, that's Jesus, were amazed at his understanding and his answers. It's an incredible scene to imagine, isn't it? This mastermind child astounds everyone with his knowledge. He even leaves the teachers in the capital city with jaws dropped. It reminds me of the reality TV show Child Genius. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's this contest between super clever kids. And they can calculate hard sums, and they can spell rare words, and they can memorise whole packs of cards. Basically, they astonish audiences with their braininess. And this scene with Jesus, it reminds me of that. But in the Bible, it should also remind us of someone else. Who else has understanding, as verse 47 described Jesus? Or who else is filled with wisdom, as verse 40 describes Jesus? And one obvious answer is Solomon, the one who had wisdom and understanding beyond measure. That's how the book of Kings describes him. He too astonished everyone with his knowledge. And why is that significant? Well, Solomon also was a son of David, and Solomon also was a kingly son of David. In fact, Solomon was the first one, the first royal son. And Jesus, he looks just like him here. His wisdom, his understanding. You see, we're not just told Jesus is this royal son. We're shown it firsthand. He really does fit the bill. So Son of God, it does mean Jesus is royal. But actually, that doesn't go far enough. As Jesus will actually say in Luke, someone greater than Solomon is here. He is a king like Solomon. He is this royal son. But he's also more than that. As we've said, Son of God also means Jesus is divine. He's the divine son. And I've put that as the second subpoint on the sheets. He's from God, as God himself. And as I said, that's probably what we think of instinctively. And again, Luke's clearly told us that Jesus is that figure. He keeps calling Jesus by God's name, the Lord. So Zechariah says that John will go before Jesus, but he doesn't call him Jesus. He calls him the Lord. And Elizabeth says that Jesus' mother has come to her. But again, she doesn't call him Jesus. She calls him the Lord. So Luke's clearly told us that Jesus is this divine son. But again, Luke actually shows us that firsthand here. And you can maybe see that from where we are in the story. Jesus astounding everyone with his knowledge, having wisdom, being filled with wisdom and having understanding. That shouldn't only remind us of Solomon, it should also remind us of God. He's ultimately the one who's wise and understanding. And we saw that in our series on the book of Job last term, you might remember. But you can clearly see that from where we go in the story. So as we said, Jesus' parents eventually find Jesus in the temple, and Mary is pretty upset with him. And I'm sure the parents here can empathise with that. Imagine if your child had gone off for days without saying, I guess you'd be pretty upset too. And here's how Mary expresses it in verse 48. Son, why have you treated us so? Behold, your father and I have been searching for you in great distress. In other words, Jesus, what are you playing at? You know, we've been worried sick looking for you. And here's Jesus' striking response in verse 49. And this is the bit I really want us to notice. Verse 49. And he said to them, why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be in my Father's house? So here Jesus is. He's standing in the temple, the house of God. And what does he call it? My Father's house. And maybe we don't feel the shock of that, but it is meant to be shocking. No other Jew would ever have used those words. This is how one writer puts it. In all the long biblical record, not even Moses, who had built the tabernacle, not David, who had longed to build the temple, nor Solomon, who had actually built it, no prophet, no king or commoner, not the most exalted of them, had ever referred to the tabernacle or temple as my Father's house. In other words, Jesus is unique. He has a relationship with God like no one else. He isn't just another child genius, one who astonishes audiences with his braininess. He isn't just another Solomon, one who astounds everyone with his knowledge. No, Jesus is the divine Son. He's from God, as God himself. And I know this is hard to do, but imagine this was the only thing you knew about Jesus. He's this royal and divine Son of God. How would you expect him to act? If he's royal, I think I'd expect him to act with some pride, putting himself on a higher level than others, placing himself in a better class than others, assuming the top position. And if he's divine, I guess you'd expect that all the more, putting himself on an even higher level, placing himself in an even higher class. But here's the surprise. That isn't how he acts. And this is point two on the inside of the service sheets. Jesus acts in humility. Jesus acts in humility. And I think he does that towards two groups in this passage. So firstly, he acts in humility towards the teachers. As we've said, Jesus' parents find him in the temple. He's conversing with these teachers, and he astounds them with his knowledge. And he reveals that he isn't just some child genius, he's the royal, even divine, Son of God. And with that in mind, I think verse 46 is striking. He's listening to the teachers. This is the one from God, as God himself. I think it would be pretty valid for him to do all the talking. But that isn't what he does. He humbles himself to listen. He gives ear to others. And there's more in verse 46. He isn't just hearing from the teachers. He's even learning from the teachers. Asking them questions, verse 46. I guess that points to Jesus' humanity. Even as Son of God, he still needed to be taught things. But I think that still points to his humility. Even as Son of God, he still wanted to be taught things. He was willing to put himself below these teachers. He was willing to place himself beneath these teachers. It would take humility. I mean, imagine being one of those child geniuses on TV. You'd have to arrive at school, you'd have to go to your classroom, and your teachers might be nowhere near to your IQ score, nowhere close to your intelligence. And yet you'd have to sit beneath them, and you'd have to learn from them. It would take humility, wouldn't it? And it would take even more humility for Jesus here. His teachers would be nowhere near to his wisdom, nowhere close to his understanding, and yet he sits beneath them and he learns from them. So he acts in humility towards the teachers, and secondly, he acts in humility towards his parents. Let's have a look at verse 51. This is the last thing Jesus does in this scene, and I'll read it for us. And he went down with his parents and came to Nazareth. And this is the bit I want us to notice. And was submissive to them. And again, isn't that striking? This is the royal, even divine Son of God. The one who can call God Father. You'd expect him to put himself below no one. You'd expect him to place himself beneath no one. But what does he do here? He came to Nazareth and was submissive to them, his parents. He obeys Mary and Joseph. He cleans his room when they say. He eats his vegetables when they say. He goes to bed when they say. It would take humility. I'm pretty useless with history, but I learnt a bit this week. And it turns out the youngest British king was Henry VI. I hope that's right. And he became king at 8 months old. And imagine growing up as Henry. I don't know what role his mum had in his life, but let's just pretend it was a normal one. And you're in charge of a whole country. The nation bows the knee to you. And yet you need to obey mum. To clean your room when she says. To eat your vegetables when she says. To go to bed when she says. Again, it would take humility, wouldn't it? And it would take even more humility for Jesus here. As we said, this is the royal, divine Son of God. The one who can call God Father. And yet, verse 51, he was submissive to his parents. So Jesus acts in humility towards the teachers, towards his parents. And I think that's underlined by another element of this passage. And that's the echoes of the Old Testament here. And in particular, Jesus seems very similar to Samuel. And on your sheets, I've put the comparison in a table. And these are all just examples from today's passage. But as we've seen in other weeks, there are others earlier in Luke too. But let me take you through this table. So first row, their families are alike. Jesus' parents go to Jerusalem every year. Samuel's parents go to their major city every year, Shiloh. Second row, their labels are alike. Jesus is called the boy Jesus. Samuel is called the boy Jesus, boy Samuel, sorry. Third row, their locations are alike. Jesus spends time in the temple. Samuel spends time in the temple. And fourth row, their descriptions are alike. So let me read Luke 2, verse 52. And Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favour with God and man. And now let me read you 1 Samuel 2, verse 26. And listen out for the parallels. Now the boy Samuel continued to grow in stature and in favour with the Lord and also with man. And the second half of each verse, though, is basically the same. What do Samuel and Jesus increase in? In stature and in favour. Who do they increase in it with? With God, or the Lord, and man. So there are all these similarities. The families, the labels, the locations, the descriptions. Jesus is clearly being compared to Samuel. But here's the obvious question. Why? What's the significance? Well, as I said, I think it underlines this humility point. Samuel too acts in humility. He does finish his ministry in greatness. You know, he's this significant prophet and he acts as a leader. But he starts his ministry in a sort of lowliness. He's this insignificant boy and he acts as a servant. And it's just like that with Jesus, isn't it? He starts his ministry in a sort of lowliness. He's this boy born in a manger to a poor family, and he acts in humility, learning from the teachers, submitting to his parents. And as Mary is precious about Jesus, as she cherishes him, as she treasures him, I think we're meant to do the same. We're to treasure who he is. Jesus is the Son of God, the royal Son, who has wisdom and understanding. The divine Son, who can call God Father. And we're to treasure how he acts. Jesus acts in humility, even as Son of God, learning from the teachers. Even as Son of God, submitting to his parents. Let me finish by reading those words about Mary again in verse 51, I think it is. And his mother treasured up all these things in her heart.